Well, good morning and welcome to the local spotlight show from the WJBM studio in Jerseyville, Illinois. This morning I have with me a history buff. He's also works for Bayer Company as a customer process coordinator and is on the Historical Society Board and the Jersey County Fair Board, and a young man that's single. Still single, ladies. You know, this guy knows some stuff, but he's a history buff, and we're just going to talk a little bit of history today. Welcome, Connor Ashlock. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Oh, yeah. And you have a family history here, right? Oh,
absolutely. My family's been here for a pretty long time, both sides of my family, the Hefners and the Ashlocks. They settled in Greene County around Kane and Providence in the 1820s. And then through the years, we kind of mingled down to the Jerseyville area around the late 1800s, and we've been here ever since.
Yes, and your dad was a treasurer for many years?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Dad's made his own little mark, I think. My dad started with the Jersey County Sheriff's Office in 1981 under Frank Yocum, and retired there in 02 and was the treasurer from that point up until about 2022.
Well, I know you know a lot about history. And you, we have some similar interests, of course, but you know a lot more about it than I do. But I'm going to ask you this question. You know, Jersey County, Greene County, mm-hmm. Calhoun County, at one point in time, years ago, you might know the number or the year, basically Indian Territory for the most part, true?
Oh, yeah, for the most part, sure.
Why did people come here? And who came here to this area?
It's interesting. Illinois, if you read the history books, and for those of you who are interested in Illinois history, I highly recommend, it's called Frontier Illinois by James Davis, and it's a very informative text. But there is a multitude of reasons why people came here. So it started out, the southern one-third of Illinois was the original settled portion of the state, and in the early pioneers, they did not like prairies. They liked wooded areas where you were away from possible Native American raids, from prairie fires and things of that sort. And they liked to hug along the rivers, and that's where Illinois got its start. Well, then as settlement increased, they started pushing northward into our area. And so that's where a lot of our southern persuasion comes from. They came from Virginia, the Carolinas, Tennessee, Kentucky, that area. But in the 1820s, you start to see a huge cluster of Yankees coming into Illinois, and they blended with the Southerners in a very interesting way. Sometimes there is some, you know, little hostility here and there, but you know, as long as everyone was willing to be cooperative and neighborly, there was no issue. But Yankees were very much so eager to build communities and to conglomerate.
Well,
and so
explain. Yankees, the term Yankee.
New Englanders, but these were New Englanders that had their own ideas. They liked community. They liked social contracts. They liked compacts. Whereas the Southerners, they liked to be a little bit more rural, a little bit more on their own and independent. Individualistic. Yankees, on the other hand, weren't always quite so individualistic. They didn't mind conglomerating into communities. And whenever you look at Jerseyville or Carrollton, you see these communities that are quite reflective of a New England setting, you know, where originally life centered around the courtyard or the meeting house, which sometimes could be the two in the same. You know, you worshiped in it on Sundays and you held court on it occasionally during the week. What brought them down here was the idea of, you know, there was the soil is hard to cultivate in New England. And so that was one reason. Another reason was available land was running out east of the Appalachian Mountains, or Appalachian, whatever you'd prefer. There was a couple of climate-related events that were problematic as well. There's such as the year without a summer, they call it, in 1816. There was just some lower temperatures, and it really affected cultivation. So eventually, really with that, and also too, actually, you have to take into consideration that you have, here's dad, he's still farming, and he has, you know, anywhere from 4 to 9 kids.
Right.
All the boys want to farm, and they're like, well, where do we go? And so you have to go out west. And so that's what brings a lot of them out to our area. Whenever settlement opened up in Illinois in the 1810s, in that era, because prior to that, people were still coming in here, but the federal government recognized it after that point. You know, whenever we're territory, people started, you know, coming in, really. And to give you an idea, in 1810, the population of Illinois was roughly 12,000 persons. In 1820, it was roughly 55,000 persons. And settlement in our area in particular begins in the 1810s. The earliest settlers that we know of in Jersey County, or what would become Jersey County, came about 1815.
Who are some of those early settlers?
Oh, goodness. I can't think of their names off the top of my head. Well, two of them were they had the last name of Harryford, and they were brothers from, I believe, Tennessee. Daniel Allen and his sons were some of them as well, and they settled in an area kind of north of Jerseyville that they called the Panhandle. Now, why they called it the Panhandle, I do not know why. Another one would be John Gunnerman around the Fieldon area, and he's actually an individual that we have. It was him and his son that have written down accounts of explaining why they didn't like to go to the prairies, for example. They settled around, I think if I'm remembering correctly right now, it was around the Reddish Ford Bottoms, that area. Mm-hmm. Sometimes down there in that time, and depending upon the time of the year, you can get pretty sick because of poisoned water or something of that sort. And so it was around the 1820s, people became a little bit more trusting of prairies. And especially in the 1830s, after the introduction of the steel moldboard plow, prior to that, you know, using wooden plows or cast iron plows, trying to break up those mm-hmm. dense root systems in the prairie soil was just next to impossible. But after the steel moldboard plow comes in to view, cultivation of that land becomes so much more accessible and so much more easier. And that probably explains why some of the single biggest year for land being purchased in Illinois from the federal government was, I think, 1835, 1836. And so, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand with this idea of, well, it's a lot easier to cultivate the soil now, let's get to work. And so, and then as some infrastructural improvements continued to be made in the area, especially with as far as the river or the rivers were concerned, that just exacerbated, I guess you could say, in population. So it was this give and take a bit, this push and pull, or this for that. That some people came, they improved it, more people came, together they improved it more people came, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And then we find ourselves, more people came, and then the Civil War breaks out.
Yeah.
And we had both North and South people mm-hmm. from... Tell us about that.
Well, you have to recognize that Illinois is a border state, and I don't mean to get inflammatory at all, but right now there is a conversation going on in our country, the national conversation of, was the Civil War fought over slavery, or was it fought over states' rights? And I guess you could say that it was both, but we do ourselves a grave injustice toward our history and toward our posterity whenever we try to misconstrue some things. Slavery was a significant issue in national conversation from the get-go. I mean, we're talking Declaration of Independence days. You know, I mean, you have this issue where they're thinking about getting rid of slavery in the country, even in the 1700s, and you have a Southern delegation that's like, no, we can't do that. We'll walk out and we'll fight with the British. And you're like, well, we have to have a republic before we can accomplish
right.
the slavery issue.
And they had to go along with them.
Exactly. They're like, we have to have a republic. Otherwise, all of our heads right. are going to be hung by the
yes.
British.
Yes.
And so, then, so, you know, they I guess they kick the can down the road. And then it gets to this issue where we have to maintain senatorial balance. So as people start migrating westward, you know, Manifest Destiny really starts to take hold and people start moving into Illinois and Missouri and Ohio and Tennessee and Kentucky, you know, basically the Northwest and Southwest territory. And we start to see more states coming into the Union and more territories joining. We find that in the House of Representatives, there is a high representation of northern-minded folks. There's more Yankees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have higher population clusters in those areas as compared to other regions of the United States. And so it makes perfect sense. And so the House, more often than not, was, you know, anti-slavery. The only recourse that the Southern Planting Society had, you know, planters, you know, plantation owners or mm-hmm. folks that were pro-slavery or whatever the case may be, the only recourse that they had was in the Senate. And so whenever we started to see this thing where when one state enters the Union, that's a free state, a slave state has to come in or vice versa. And it's just very interesting. And we see it that we see that play out starting around the War of 1812 and continuing from there on. But it really starts to play out and people really start to notice during the Missouri Compromise. Missouri wants to come into the state as Missouri Territory wishes to be become a part of the Union. And so enabling legislation you know, those proceedings begin in the House of Representatives under the speakership of Henry Clay. And so this back and forth starts to begin, you know, where they're like, well, we will allow James Talmadge, I believe he's of New York or Massachusetts. He introduces this piece of legislation that says, or this part to the Missouri Enabling Bill that says, okay, well, Missouri can come in as a slave state, but under gradual manumission, basically. So slaves are going to gradually be set free. Basically, that doesn't really work out because it passes the bill, it passes the House, and then it goes to the Senate, and the Senate was like, wrong answer, kicks it back to the House, and there's this back and forth. And that's when we actually start to hear some words like secession, mm-hmm. and we're going to rescind our ratification of the United States Constitution. That's when we start hearing those conversations start to emerge, and it gets a little spicy. And so, and that's about the time that settlement begins in Jersey County.
Okay.
In that time, and you have to remember that these are our neighbors. You know, Alton at this time is the chief economic center of Illinois. What's right across the bridge from Alton? Missouri.
Yeah.
St. Louis, which had a very active slave auction block. You know, I mean, it's a little hairy. And so basically, not to get too much into the weeds with the Missouri Compromise, this district of Massachusetts, then known as the District of Maine, was like, hey, we want to be a state. And you have people all over the United States taking a collective sigh of relief because like, okay, good. Civil War is evaded. And the compromise basically says this. Maine, you're going to come in as a free state. Missouri, you're going to come in as a slave state. And we have maintained the senatorial balance of power where there is an equal amount of senators who are pro-slavery and an equal amount of senators who are anti-slavery. And that balance will continue as long as the likes of, you know, Henry Clay and Daniel Webster and such are in Congress. But once they kind of die out in the 50s, in the 1850s, things start going get chaotic. Well, the 1850s is about the same time that we see the Underground Railroad really picking up, especially in Jersey County. We have abolitionists, you know, and there's some folks that would like to say, well, Jersey County really wasn't on the Underground Railroad. And we're like, incorrect.
Yeah.
It definitely was.
How many different spots do we have?
We'll never know for certain, but we probably have we definitely have at least half a dozen.
Okay.
When you take into consideration, this secret network of individuals that are working together for a common cause, especially in the Otterville area and the Jerseyville area, perhaps maybe even in the Grafton area, you know, whenever you take into consideration all these different players that have to be involved, and we'll never know because they never kept records.
Right.
But, you know, you don't just dig tunnels under wooded areas fighting root systems unless you have a purpose for it. We see a tunnel system We see a tunnel system existing underneath the Cheney house, which is still there in certain spots. There is a old wives' tale that tunnel actually connects to Hazeldale for whatever reason. I don't know who started that.
Yes.
But Hazeldale was built in 1866 by a Confederate lieutenant colonel. Highly doubt that there is any connection between that. But, you know, the Snedekers had a tunnel system. They actually had two. The Cheney house has one. My personal thesis on that, my personal hypothesis is that they probably took a cue from Alton, where there's a tunnel network that exists. Hard telling. But wherever you have people, you know, have to remember that whenever you have one, there's a push and pull, you know, there's an opposite reaction. And so whenever you see these anti-slavery societies arising in Jersey County, which we do see, you know, prior to 1850, we see pro-slavery folks getting riled up at that too. You know, I mean, you know, we see that today even, you know, we have a group of individuals that are pro this, mm-hmm. and then another group of individuals in response to that say, we're anti that, you know, and the same thing existed in Jersey County, except it's very interesting. Nowadays, I think we're a little bit more subdued in our hostilities. In the 1800s, they really quite weren't that way. Things could get a little vicious. And people took their beliefs very seriously. They took their politics seriously. They took their religion seriously. They took family honor seriously. And nowadays we're like, you know, we're a little bit more transient, a little bit more ambiguous. We can jump back and forth. But back in those old days, it wasn't necessarily the case.
Now, was Illinois a slave state?
Illinois was not a slave state. Now there, but you can bring in slaves into Illinois. You could bring in slaves. Illinois did have slaves. In fact, actually, if you look at our earliest census records of the state, you will see that there is slave activity that is taking place. It's interesting. Jacksonville was a mecca of on the Underground Railroad. It was, you know, it was a favored site, but there were some slaves that were owned individuals in Jacksonville, which is very interesting. You know, on the Underground Railroad, that's where we were trying to send folks off to. They were following the rivers.
I see. Okay. And so on this, the people here in Jerseyville, mm-hmm. you said some were for, some were against.
Yeah.
And it was a constant. Some people were open about it. Some people were secretive about it. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of a battle going on.
Yeah, and it had pinch points in it. You know, we see the conversation emerging as settlement actually starts to take off and communities start to be established in our area. You have to remember, Chris, that Jersey County split from Greene County in 1839, okay? And so in the 1830s, what's happening? Well, settlements are being formed, they're being developed, but they really start to take on their development in the 1840s. Now, Grafton was already experiencing development. Jerseyville already had some development as well, but it's still pretty infantile. And so now once we're in the 1840s, we start to see communities really starting to form. And how do we mark that? Well, when do businesses start opening up their doors? When are congregations formally established? You know, things of that nature. You know, when are we starting to attract, you know, distinct professions like, you know, doctors and lawyers and et cetera. And you know, that those are your markings that you can look at and go, okay, we see a community that's starting to form. And these we have some issues with some congregations. You have one congregation in Jerseyville that was like, we are anti-slavery. You have another congregation in Jerseyville that goes, we are pro-slavery. You have another congregation in Jerseyville that goes, let's just decide to just not say anything about it and see what happens. Yeah, good luck. And so, because you have to remember that a congregation is a single body composed of many members. And so you have 18 members of one particular church that in the 1840s, they come to a board meeting of the church, and they say, here's the deal. You're either going to pass a resolution at a board meeting that formally declares that we, this congregation, are absolutely opposed to slavery. As an act not in keeping with Christian teaching, and or the ultimatum here, you will issue us letters of dismissal. Nowadays, if you're not involved in a particular, you know, historic congregation, you know, or historic Protestant, you know, strain, then you're like, okay, what's the big deal? That's a huge deal. You actually saw a lot of settlers that brought with them like letters of dismissal on good terms from a congregation back home. That way they, you know, could show their church that they're joining with, see, I'm joining a good standing. And so these guys are, this is a significant event. They're basically saying, we are absolutely prepared to sever fellowship ties with you over this issue. And the rest of the church responded with, all right, here's your letters of dismissal. And so 18 letters of dismissal were given. And now a couple of them started to trickle back in subsequent years, but that still goes to show, I mean, we have some significant changes that are taking place and some significant activity. And that significant activity continues into the 1850s as the Underground Railroad really takes off. And then in the 1860s during the Civil War, where we see Isaac Snedeker, for example, who is chiefly involved in abolitionist activities in this area, there is a story that was circulated. We don't have it in our own county records. I actually stumbled across it doing broader Illinois research. This was a book published by a man named Jeriah Bonham in 1883, and he had interviewed individuals all over Illinois. Two of them were Jersey County residents. One of those residents was Isaac Snedeker, and he tells a story of the Knights of the Golden Circle camping out around the Phils Creek area here in Jersey County.
And the Knights of the Golden Circle were?
They were a pro-slavery group. They were founded in Lexington, Kentucky in 1854, and they wanted to preserve slavery in the Confederacy, the Riviera Maya area of Mexico, and the Caribbean islands. And
what were they up to?
They were up to nefarious activities, Chris. They wanted to burn down the town.
Of Jerseyville.
They were threatening some serious stuff here. It was bad enough that they sent out a politician in Jerseyville, like, hey, go reason with them, see if you can't figure something out.
Because we couldn't have stopped them if they came on.
I don't know. We don't know how many there were there. I mean, I'm sure, but we do know that the community was like, we need some reinforcements, because according to the story that was preserved by Jeriah Bonham, that came from Isaac Snedeker, someone had gone down to Alton to fetch some federal troops who were stationed in Alton because of the Civil War. And they came back up, and it got to the point where sables were crashing against each other. And Isaac Snedeker, this happens right outside of his house. And he's like, I have no idea what's going on. He's just basically focused on getting his wife and children hiding somewhere. And which they did have two tunnels in their face. So, I mean, they had a way to escape. He basically shouts out, be ye friend or foe? And they said, friend, come with us. And so, I mean, that's basically the Knights of the Golden Circle debacle. But you wonder, why don't we talk about that? Why don't we know about that? A lot of our records from the 1800s are missing in action. The records that we have come from snippets that are preserved from neighboring community newspapers, which are critical for our work. But Jersey County specific newspapers from that time, they're lost. We can't find them.
Well, Connor, we've run out of time. Very interesting. And if somebody wants to get involved in some local history, what do you say to them? If they want to volunteer and learn all that's going on, where we come from and all that, what do you say?
I would say that coming from a 27-year-old who volunteers extensively, it is a very rewarding experience. And some people...
Who do they contact?
They can contact me. They can contact... I'll throw her under the bus. I'm sure she won't attack me. And if so, I know how to lock the door. Beth McGlasson. You can contact Beth McGlasson. And there's several others on our board. Just reach out to. And it's not all history-based. Say you want to preserve history, but you're not necessarily the historian type. We got plenty of other work to do.
Yes. In the Historical Society, there's things going on there all the time.
A lot of folks don't realize this, Chris. You'd be shocked. They think that we're the Cheney Mansion and a couple log cabins. They do not realize that we have a collection of thousands of artifacts and sitting on a giant complex. They do not even think of it.
Well, thanks so much, Connor. And hope to have you back again.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm sure I would accept the invitation.
All right. See you. Have a great day.